Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you on this Tuesday, August the 25th, 2020. 8/25/2020, the last Tuesday in the month of August. How about that? We are just trucking along here in the summer of 2020, which has been one of the most unique, let's say, summers we have ever had. 13 and a half minutes past the hour, coming up on 14 minutes past the hour. I was thinking about this yesterday. Who would have thought we would be approaching Labor Day just a couple weeks away and have been through what we've been through? Does time seem to be flying by for you as well? It just seems to be flying by this summer. It just seems like Memorial Day was yesterday. July 4th was the other day. It certainly is an interesting time, to be sure. One of the most interesting summers on record, and I think we will all remember this for a long, long time. Now, as summer ends, well, quickly, I want to do a programming note. Coming up tomorrow on this program from 8:10 until 9 a.m., every year it comes out. It is the Old Farmer's Almanac, and we will have the assistant editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac on tomorrow morning from 8 to 9 a.m. before the almanac comes out to tell us what this year's weather, this upcoming weather, might look like over the next year. And then Thursday morning, we're going to have a visit with one of my old friends. You know her from her columns in Good Housekeeping Magazine. She is the undisputed queen of helpful hints, Heloise, and she's going to tell you how to get ready for back to school and also dealing with cleaning and things of that nature during this pandemic we are in. That'll be Thursday morning, 9:10 a.m. until 10 a.m., the legendary Heloise. But this hour, this is somebody I've really wanted to talk to because we are now under a week away as this summer ends from going back to school. There are a lot of questions in the air. There's just a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of, questions that maybe we don't have answers to. So we are going to turn to Superintendent for the Marion City Schools, Dr. Ron Arusi, for some of those as he gets ready with his staff and crew to head back to school very, very soon. Dr. Arusi, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much for having me on again today. I always appreciate the opportunity to talk with you folks and get some questions answered, as I heard, and we'll do the best we can to get those questions answered today.
Well, Dr. Arusi, I think right off the top here, as we get ready to go back to school, what is it going to look like in these buildings when the kids come back next week?
Yeah, it's definitely going to look a lot different than what we're used to. So Marion City Schools is opening up in our hybrid model. So basically 50% of our students would be in the buildings at any one time. So we have grouped our students alphabetically. And so group A, which is those students whose guardians' names end in A through J, would be group A. And they would be in school on Mondays and Tuesdays. And be remote Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then those K through Z students would be group B. They would be remote Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and be in school on Thursday and Friday. Then we also have a group C, which is kind of a list of our students that are qualified as most vulnerable. Some of those students have special needs, and so they would be in school actually on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. Wednesday is our cleaning day. So we're in between groups on Wednesday, and so our recommendation is to really do a deep clean within all of our buildings and all of our high-touch areas. But so that's kind of the basic schedule for our students. But, you know, as they're in school, obviously, with 50% of our students in the buildings at one time, you know, class sizes are going to look a lot smaller than we're typically used to. So we might have classes with you know, anywhere from 6 to 10 to 12 students in a classroom. And so I think there's an opportunity there for us to take advantage of this situation somewhat, because we're not typically used to those types of class sizes in public education. But so we can really, you know, take a focus on some personalized learning with our students. I think our teachers are really looking forward to having the students back. And again, you know, just kind of figuring out what this layoff in the spring has done, and, you know, throughout the summer, just to gauge where students are at academically. You know, we're definitely doing what we call a gap analysis to see where we left off as opposed to where we are now, and make sure we fill in all the holes that we missed academically. So a lot of work to do and a lot of planning going into to next week, but I feel like we have a good plan. We're confident that we're going to be able to keep our students and staff as safe as possible. We followed all the recommendations from our public health department. Shout out to Tracy Kinsler and Maya and her staff there. They've been outstanding in working with schools. And, you know, if I have a question, I email them about, you know, how should we handle playground equipment? And they give us some suggestions. And so things like that, we've really had a good relationship with them, and I appreciate all their efforts.
When it comes to the things that we see when we go out in public, the wearing of masks, social distancing, how will that be taken care of in the schools?
Yeah, I mean, those are the same guidelines that we will be following. Those five protocols that we have, number one is those daily assessments. So our families, we've done a pretty good job of getting information out to our families. You know, we have a couple billboards up in Marion City, and just encouraging families to follow those five protocols, including the daily assessment. So every morning our families have to have conversations with their children about how they feel, asking them if they, you know, have shown any symptoms, and really, you know, letting the school know that on a regular basis our students kind of have passed their daily assessment and are ready to come to school. But we will also be looking at our students in the classroom in the morning and having those same conversations about, you know, how do you feel? Do you have a cough? Do you feel warm? And also, have you come in contact with anybody who's displayed any symptoms? Because we have to make sure that, I think that's a key component of, you know, we're not testing students, so to speak, but our assessments are basically conversations with our students that we have to have. So that's number one. We have a regimen of hand washing and sanitizing ready to go. So all of our classrooms have sanitizer. We have scheduled bathroom breaks so all of our students can wash their hands on a regular basis. So that's the second protocol. And then, you know, daily cleaning. So our staff and our teachers are really going to be diligent in making sure that we are cleaning all high-touch areas. You know, it's going to look a little bit different than what we're used to. A recommendation from the health department is, you know, we need to keep our doors open and those kinds of things, so that we're limiting the amount of objects that we touch. And so therefore, because we certainly can't clean buildings top to bottom, you know, between every classroom. So we're trying to limit what students do touch. You know, we're not sharing supplies and things like that. Students will have their own, so that we're not having to clean them, you know, between classes and things like that. So that's the cleaning regimen. You know, we have our board did pass the resolution, and of course the state has mandated mask wearing. All of our students, preschool on up, will be wearing masks. We will, you know, give the opportunities for mask breaks. You know, throughout the day, our teachers have been really, they've gone through some training, and they're still going through training this week. Our school nurses have done an outstanding job of really preparing our teachers for what that looks like and making recommendations as well. And so we think we have all those protocols in place, and then, you know, we're also ready for when and if, and we hope not, if a student or a staff member has been diagnosed with COVID, we have a system ready to go in place where we will be able to do the contact tracing. The Marion Public Health Department is basically responsible for that, but they are, you know, we have contact people within each building, so that, you know, we understand who has been in contact and who needs to be quarantined, and we have a plan for, you know, how to handle that as well, and how we release information to our community in that regard. So, you know, again, those five protocols are in place. That it's going to look very different than our traditional classrooms. I mean, we typically, you know, we encourage our teachers to, you know, not stand in front of classrooms and lecture. We encourage them to do small group activities and change up and differentiate between the classroom. I think this is a point in time, though, where we're going to have to take a step back from some of those activities and really, you know, focus on some priority standards and more of, you know, what we consider explicit instruction to our students, because we can't have them, you know, not social distance.
You
so again, sorry about that length of that answer, but there's a lot that goes into it.
Oh, no. It's much appreciated. And I think one of the questions that we all have is if, heaven forbid, somebody did come down with COVID, you know, especially in middle school and high school when you're changing classes, you're changing rooms, you're coming into the building, you're leaving the building every day, wouldn't that be awful hard to track who you came in contact with?
Well, the way contact tracing works is, you know, well, first of all, as part of our protocols, you know, we have seating assignments and charts for everything we do with our students. When they get on the bus, there's a seating chart. When they come to school and go to classroom, there's a seating chart. When they sit in lunch, there's a seating chart. So we can keep track of where students are at, but more importantly, we know who's around those students. So that's, you know, that's one of the things that the health department really encouraged us to make sure we were ready and prepared for, so that if a student or a staff member has been diagnosed and the health department is notified of that, we would not be notified directly from the healthcare provider, but the healthcare provider does notify the health department. And at that point, that's when we turn over all of our information as far as seating charts and those types of things. But I think the health department really is responsible for making contact with that person who has been diagnosed. And I know they have a series of questions about, you know, where they've been, who they've come in contact with, you know, who they might have been, you know, in contact with beyond social distancing. So, you know, if I had to sit next to somebody for 15 minutes and we didn't have masks on, it's probably very likely that the health department is going to tell that person who has not been diagnosed that they probably should quarantine for 14 days. So that's kind of how that works. It's not necessarily, I think there's a misperception out there that, you know, if a student in a classroom is diagnosed and we are still wearing masks and doing our social distancing and keeping kids apart, that the health department does not really think that or determine that as a risk factor for quarantine. So, again, they have their criteria that they follow. And at that point, too, you know, we need to allow the health department to engage and do their work. And at that point, when the health department's ready, they will notify us that it's okay to, you know, put some information out about confirmed cases. So, you know, what I'm most concerned about, to be honest with you guys, is what we consider an outbreak. I know that we're probably going to have, you know, a couple cases here and there, but we're certainly concerned about whether or not, you know, there might be what's considered an outbreak. And again, I think we are doing everything we can to prevent that and following all the guidelines so that doesn't happen. I know you've seen probably these stories of school systems across the country, especially in Georgia, where, you know, they've had to quarantine hundreds of students, but also in relation to that, they did not follow CDC guidelines. So they didn't require a mask. They didn't, you know, do a hybrid model and allow for social distancing. We are doing all of that to prevent any kind of outbreak in any of our schools.
There are usually high traffic days and high traffic periods in a typical school day. Now, obviously, with the hybrid model, there will be less students in the building at one time. But when students are coming in and they want to stop and talk in the morning before class, or when they're leaving at the end of the day and they want to stop and talk to their friends before they get on the bus, or lunchtime, how will those things be handled differently than before?
Yeah, and we're going to spend probably the first 2 weeks, you know, we have some orientations planned on Monday and Thursday for our different groups, especially those students who are going to new buildings. So our sixth graders who are coming to Grant Middle School will have a day, you know, all to themselves, basically to learn the building, speak with teachers, get to know their staff members, but we're also going to concentrate very hard on making sure our students understand the protocols that are in place. And, you know, the congregation of students cannot happen in our buildings. And our teachers understand that. We are going to impress upon our students that. we're also impressing that upon our families to make sure they talk with their students before about how it's different. And I know it's going to be difficult, you know, if you haven't seen your friend all summer for a couple months, or, you know, especially in our cases, it could be as much as 6 months. They're going to want to, you know, congregate and have conversations, but we have to just be really diligent in making sure that that doesn't happen. We know there are going to be cases where it does happen, and we need to, you know, we will handle those cases accordingly, because our students really need to make sure they're following the guidelines.
How will a lunch period be handled?
Well, for most of our elementary buildings, we are going to be delivering box lunches to the classroom, so there's not really an opportunity like a buffet-style lunch where kids would be together. So all of those lunches would be delivered to the classroom. The middle school and high school looks a little bit different. You know, we are going to have some of those. We have all the protective gear in place. But again, we're not talking about, you know, a traditional, again, buffet-style lunch where a server is, you know, spooning food into a child's plate and those kinds of things. I mean, basically, they're going to be, you know, again, boxes of lunches prepared where the students would come up, grab their own lunch, you know, go by the cashier. Typically our students are assigned numbers, so there's no exchange of money or anything like that. And then they have assigned seats in the cafeteria, so they'll be, you know, 6 feet apart, and it'll look a lot different than typical lunchrooms, but I think we have a good plan to do that. And again, we would have not been able to do that if we would have had all of our students back full on face to face. So there's no way to really social distance in the lunchroom and those kinds of things. So, definitely, again, different. But I think, you know, we spent last week and all of this week with our staff members. It's been great to have them back and giving us feedback and input, you know, on what's going to happen in the classroom, how we're going to, you know, monitor the hallways, and, you know, really be, again, diligent and intentional about how we handle those COVID protocols.
Dr. Arusi, we talked earlier on about mandatory mask wearing, and that there will be mask breaks in a 7 to 8 hour day, depending on what school you go to. But, you know, second, third graders, first graders, and even high school kids for that matter, if somebody would take off a mask, just being, I don't want to wear this long, I'm a little defiant at this moment, I'm uncomfortable, who polices this? How is that handled?
Yeah, our staff and administration understand that there's going to be those times. I mean, obviously, we want to encourage all our families to take this rest of this week, and hopefully they have been up until this point, about having conversations with their children about mask wearing. And I hope that, you know, families will take this opportunity again from now until next week to practice wearing masks, and to you know, make sure that students are used to it prior to coming to school. But again, you know, it's a very important safety issue. Our students have to follow those guidelines. Obviously, we have systems in place to be able to handle, you know, if a student has a medical condition and they have a doctor's excuse and those kinds of things. We've already had arrangements for them for, you know, more frequent mask breaks and those kinds of things, and for the ability to them to be even further separated within the classrooms. But, you know, just some defiant behavior as any place, any other defiant behavior that happens in schools will be dealt with according to our student handbook. And we have sent out in our reopening plans to families that if, you know, our students don't follow the guidelines, that we do have an online program now. And if they can't handle that in school, then they would be assigned to the online program.
How will things like tutoring, after school programs, how will those all be dealt with?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. I don't know if you caught some of the district's tweets yesterday. We're very fortunate to have received another large grant from the federal government. It's called the 21st Century Community Learning Grant at Grant Middle School. We will have what we call, typically those programs are after school, and we do tutoring and students that qualify for that. We have software programs where students can engage in with laptops and try to you know, do some enrichment activities academically. But what we're doing with this year at Grant, since we got this 21st Century Grant, is we're actually going to do some of this programming virtually. And so we're calling it After School on Demand. So those students that are remote can access any of the programming that we have, really for those cases where we have to do some interventions with students, and also those cases where we can do some enrichment activities academically. So we do have those after-school programs. They'll look a little bit different, but we still plan on providing some of those supplemental materials to our students. They're definitely in need.
Mm. That's great. And those programs also exist at Harding and the elementary mm-hmm. schools.
Yes, they do. We actually have four grants, but so all of our buildings now are covered under our 21st century grants.
Mm. That's great. And how important is it to keep the students involved in things other than schoolwork, enrichment, as you say?
Well, I think, this concept of really trying to meet the needs of the whole child, not just academically. And yes, we are teaching our kids how to read and how to love to read and how to learn from reading and how to do math and number sense. And, social studies and science are all a big part of that. But, we also focus in Marion City Schools on the social emotional part. We're trying to make sure that our students are in a safe place mentally and physically. And our staff has gone through some serious training over the last couple of years. We've added, folks we call our educational support personnel to really help with those types of needs in each building. So we have an ESP in every building. Many of them have social work backgrounds, and if our students are struggling or there's family issues, then they can connect those families and students with social service agencies. But overall, when you think about music and art and athletics and extracurriculars and all those kinds of things, I'm really thrilled that our students will be able to experience some of those things. I know that, there's people in the community who are very, concerned and some of them may even be upset because, we're limited to the amount of folks that can attend events like that. But, what I try to impress upon families is, we really need to put our arms around the idea that our kids are going to be able to participate in some of those activities. And it's not more or less about, fans and parents. And we understand that parents want to be involved in that. But I'm just really happy that these kids have the opportunity to participate and perform. I mean, how devastating in last spring. I think about the girls' basketball teams who are down in Columbus getting ready to, 15 minutes before tip-off, getting notified that they couldn't play because of the health orders that came down. I mean, that just breaks my heart for some of those kids. I'm really happy that we are going to be able to allow our students to participate in those school activities that aren't directly related to the classroom, because they need that as well. And there's so much to be gained from, being on a team and, having the responsibility of practicing your instrument and all of those different things that go along with educating the whole child. Our community really needs to put their arms around that and support our kids in relation to allowing them to participate in those kinds of things and really have a positive attitude towards that. Because I know that, our students are upset as well that, many fans can't be in front of them. I wish they could be. But we really need to just be thankful at this point that we're able to participate in some of these things.
Last week was a big week when it came to athletics, when we found out that will go on. It will go on with precaution, contact sports, but it will go on. And a lot of schools still said, we're not going to do it. We just think it's a bad idea. A lot of schools said, we're going to do it in the spring. That was an option given to a lot of schools. When that came down, how was the decision made, and how do you feel about it coming this Friday, especially with football, which is what everybody seems to talk about, in Marion City Schools?
Well, and I'll say, I am involved in a lot of conversation amongst superintendents across the state of Ohio, and I happen to be actually on a Zoom call with many Central Ohio superintendents and the Franklin County Health Director and the Columbus City Health Director when they determined at that point that Columbus and Franklin County was at a crisis level, basically back in the beginning of August here, just a couple weeks ago. And, you know, the recommendation at that point for those schools was that they go completely remote because of the number of the amount of community spread that was happening in Franklin County. And so, you know, I felt bad for those superintendents who again, you know, were kind of, that was kind of a shock to them at that point, because many of them were preparing for, you know, students to come back in some kind of model. And I think, you know, I support that and I understand that decision. If you're going to be completely remote because your community is in that situation, then how can you justify, you know, anything else where students would be congregating if they can't congregate in school? And so, you know, thankfully, Marion County had not reached that level that we were close to being, you know, level four or purple or whatever that means. Again, but those conversations with Tracy Kinsler and our health director, we're very fortunate that and thankful that the Marion County community has done their part to help us reduce the spread. And I think that's the key component to that is, you know, everybody seems to get on board. And I see a difference in the last couple of weeks, even being out and about in Marion. You know, when you go to the grocery store and wherever you're at, even in restaurants, you know, you see people wearing masks and you see people attempting to social distance. And so the more we do that, you know, the more we're going to allow our students to have those opportunities. I think that's a key component. But so, you know, really that was a long answer to Marion County was just not at the place where we would, you know, have to make that decision. And we're thankful for that, but certainly support those districts and understand why they had to do that, you know, given the fact that they were going to school remotely.
We found out in the last week when it did come to athletics particularly that, you know, it is going to happen playing. There'll be some changes as far as crowd size goes and things of that nature. But already some scrimmages have been canceled. I think some parents are worried. How is that being dealt with and thought of in Marion City?
Well, you know, I'll give our athletic director, Sean Kearns, who's been actively involved in actually the MOAC has made some decisions, and they kind of got out in front of this a few weeks ago, honestly, about, you know, how we were going to handle those kinds of things. I mean, I know that, you know, there are some schools in certain counties that, you know, have determined that if another county that's a school that's from another county that might really have some difficulty with community spread, that they would get together and decide on a weekly basis who was playing and who wasn't. You probably heard that, you know, Marion City had we had a scrimmage scheduled for Saturday morning with Thomas Worthington, and we weren't able to do that, not from Marion City's point of view, but from Thomas Worthington. They had to cancel because of some diagnosed cases down there. So, you know, I think that's part of the issue that we're going to face. I mean, Sean and I have had many conversations with our coaches. You know, we decided to move senior night to our very first game. So Friday night's going to be senior night for our players because we're not sure that we're going to, you know, hopefully we get to complete the season. But in that case where we may have to cut it short, we want to give every opportunity for our kids to experience things like senior night and you know, those kinds of things. So I think, you know, we have a good plan in place for athletics. I know that we've been playing tennis. There's been tennis matches. I know there's cross-country meets and things like that that I think OHSAA has put forth some good guidelines for us to follow. And our league has done a really good job of having those conversations about how we're going to make sure every school is consistent in following those protocols.
At this point, when we look at what happened this past Saturday with Thomas Worthington, you know, that has to be a little bit of a scary moment, because if they weren't tested, if people didn't know, they could have come and that scrimmage could have happened and kids could have been affected. That's where we are in the world today.
Yeah.
When you think about that,
right.
Yeah, what do you think about?
Well, I think people need to understand. Everybody has to understand. I mean, when you go to Walmart, there's a risk. When you go out to dinner, there's a risk. When you, you know, walk on the football field, there's a certain risk. There's going to be risks. Coming back to school is a risk. And I think that's part of our reopening plan. You know, one of our opening statements in there is we all understand that, you know, we're in the midst of a pandemic. And unless we want to lock ourselves in our bedroom, there's going to be some risks that we take when we come in contact with other folks. But I think the key to that is, you know, making sure that you reduce those risks and minimize them and make sure you're following all the protocols so that that helps in reducing the spread and especially the community spread. I don't think, again, you know, we're not going to be able to open up the economy, have school, do those kinds of things without also realizing that there is a risk of transmission of the disease. It's just that, you know, that's why it's a pandemic. We're not just talking about flu season. This is, we are in the midst of a pandemic, which is a pretty serious situation.
There has been a question about testing. If a student would come up who maybe is in a lower economic situation or doesn't have both parents at home, if they came up and said, I'm not feeling well, is the school able to help them with that testing? Are they directed to somebody who could help them with that? How does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. And our, you know, whether it's an athlete or not, or if it's somebody in school, we have a school nurse, or we have a, I shouldn't say that. We have a nurse in every one of our buildings. And Chrissy Sprinkle is our district lead school nurse. She is in contact with all of them. And if there is a student or child that we feel like needs some help and really doesn't have that health care provider or that primary care physician, we have a great relationship with Ohio Health, too. You know, we have certain avenues that we can take to make sure those kids are taken care of and those families are.
Mm. You talked about teachers being back, staff being back. What is the feeling right now in the buildings right now?
Well, you know, I can tell you, so Monday was our first day with teachers back. And typically on those days, we have a big celebration and a convocation and a guest speaker. And, you know, I get up and get a chance to talk about, you know, last year and what the school year is going to look like. And so this year, I basically was in my office with my computer screen, and I did a virtual convocation, which was just flat out weird for us, you know, so it was different. And I think there, you know, was some anxiety. We've done the best we could to really, you know, just talk about how we're going to handle these situations. But I've been able to get out to all of our buildings over the last week and even in this week and having conversations with staff members. I think now that they're back and they've had discussions about how we're going to handle all of these things, I feel like they feel a little bit more comfortable because I think they feel like they're prepared. I think when day one, when we walked in, we probably just didn't, there are a lot of questions that we need to answer, and they did not feel prepared at that point. You know, and for us, it was crucial to have our staff members back here and involved in some of the decisions that we're making about, you know, how to implement these different protocols. So I feel like as we have solved issues and had conversations, I feel like our staff is a little bit more comfortable. And the staff members I talked to over the last days are just can't wait to have our students back. They really miss the kids. They really are concerned about them. They want to talk to them about how they're handling this situation. So I feel like our staff's really looking forward to Monday.
Are there any staff members who have said, I just can't come back during this?
Well, we've had a few staff members that have expressed concerns, and we communicated early on. We want to know those staff members that might have some compromising conditions, and might be at greater risk for COVID. So, you know, we have 1,200 students that have signed up for our online option, and so we gave our teachers the ability to really consider whether or not that might be the best option for them. So anybody who did have a concern, we were able to accommodate their needs by assigning them to the online work. So they'll still be in buildings and still be, you know, having contact with students, but they won't have contact with as many students on a regular basis.
The 1,200 students who have signed up for remote learning, what will that look like for them?
You know, every one of our students is going to receive a device. We've done a lot of surveying of parents to make sure they have access to the internet. We have two different online learning platforms that we are going to be using. For our elementary and middle school students, we have a program called Excellus, which is content learning management system. Our teachers basically are directing students, supporting them, you know, making sure that they're doing the work that they need for our online program at the high school level. We have a program called Apex, and Apex is more of a, you know, individualized classes like an Algebra 1 class, History 2 class. Those kinds of things are all accessible to our students. So our students at the online level for secondary can basically, for the most part, take every single course that they had, which, you know, they signed up for in the high school, and have that same course provided to them remotely. So I think we have a really good plan for that. And we were, again, fortunate to get some CARES Act money to both buy Chromebooks for every student and all of the software that goes along with that.
We talked earlier on about the fear of an outbreak. I think those fears exist anywhere. A lot of people are at this point. If that should happen, heaven forbid, what would happen? What would be the plan?
Yeah, again, you know, it's important for our community to know that that's not a decision that, you know, myself or the school board or anyone else would make on their own. That's all determined with our communications with the health department. So basically, I think if they would see more than three or four cases, depending on the population of the building, then they would contact us and think about, at that point, you know, we would have to shut down. And we may have to do that. We may have to shut down an entire building and go remote for a couple weeks and you know, basically quarantine everybody that's in that building and do a deep clean and all those kinds of things. So that would all be determined, again, on the recommendation from the health department. They're the ones that get notification of all the cases. You know, they would notify us, and I'm sure that Tyler Pigman and Tracy Kinsler would be in communication with us about, you know, where we're at in relation to an outbreak.
As we head into the start of school next week, in your mind as the superintendent, what are the best and worst case scenarios for how this is going to go?
Yeah, good question. You know, I'm just, I am really just taken aback by the amount of rapid change that occurs on a regular basis. And again, you know, if you'd asked me back in June going into July, I was, you know, anticipating having our students back full on face to face. You know, we knew we had to take some precautions and put some protocols in place. And as the economy opened up and we saw cases on the rise, and so when Tracy told us at that point, you know, and it was July 17th was our meeting, and she said, you know, at this point I have to recommend that you plan for a hybrid model. And so, you know, again, rapid change in a couple weeks, with less than a month before school started, we put all of those changes in place. So best case scenario for me is that we have some consistency in what we're doing. I feel like we have a really good plan. I feel like we're going to be able to take advantage of this hybrid model and provide some personalized instruction for our students. The best case scenario is we continue down this path of less cases, and maybe in 6 weeks, you know, we can get our students back full on face to face. That would be the best case scenario. We want to see all of our kids back in school every day, you know, having those experiences. You know, and then obviously the worst case scenario would be an outbreak where we'd have to shut down the entire district and go remote.
You know, I would imagine roles are changing in the middle of a pandemic. I think they have for everybody. At this point, what do you feel the role of a superintendent is as schools get ready to reopen?
Yeah, that's a good question. When I addressed the staff last Monday, you know, I have 17 years experience as a superintendent. And we have many teachers that have a lot of experience in the classroom and principals. But this year, I feel like we're all in our first year. So I guess for me, the most important role for me is the communication piece. We need to make sure that we're communicating with our staff, with our families, with our administrators. You know, every time I get information, I'm doing probably more one calls to their our families are probably sick of the phone ringing and hearing my voice every other day in relation to a message that is delivered about whether you're in group A or group B or online classrooms or athletics or any of those kinds of things. For me, it's making sure that, you know, everybody is aware and has been communicated with about what we're doing on a regular basis. We can't do enough communication. I know there's still questions to be answered. You know, but I think my role is also just to provide some strong leadership and really just listen. You know, we've had staff members that have been anxious, I've had emails with questions, and really just, you know, try to lead our district and into this together and make sure that, you know, we stay together and we support each other. And I think that just kind of comes from the attitude from the top about making sure that, you know, they understand that I care very deeply about all of them, and we need to continue to care very deeply about each other. And we need to make sure that our students know that how much we care about them when they come back as well.
You know, we all live in this unbelievable situation now that is this pandemic, and it literally is life or death, which is even, it's unbelievable to even say those words.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, what keeps you up at night?
Well, I don't sleep well anyway, so there's a lot of things that keep me up at night. I think that, I guess, you know, what I'm most concerned about, obviously, is, you know, as you said, we, you know, that God forbid for us, you know, that anybody within this community from school, you know, would get in a situation where, you know, somebody would pass away or anything like that. I mean, I guess those are some of the things that really, you know, that really bother you. And, you know, I have a personal situation with that, so, that it's more personal for me. In worrying about those kinds of things, but I would think that, you know, just the safety of our students and families and staff is what's most concerning.
You know, it's interesting, and it's an awful thing to talk about, but as you say, God forbid,
yep.
Something would happen to one of these students or teachers or staff members where they would pass away. You know, this is a life and death issue right now, and we don't know when a vaccine is coming.
Right.
If that would happen, the community has never seen anything like that. How would you imagine the reaction would be?
Well, you know, unfortunately, you know, again, as I said, I've had 17 years experience, and unfortunately, you know, I've had to deal with, you know, some of those types of tragedies. And so, you know, that's, you know, that's just a case where I think that, you know, the community, you know, needs to come together as much as possible and support one another. I think we, you know, we have all of those supports in place. You know, we have a crisis intervention plan that we've been working on, you know, every year. We continue to have those. And we've had those situations, you know, here in Marion, unfortunately, and I know many school districts have faced that. And I guess, you know, those are things that we're prepared to handle, in prepared to provide support for, you know, families, other staff members, other students, all those kinds of things. So we just, you know, and we hope and pray that all of our students are safe and all of our staff members are safe at all times. But, you know, we have unfortunately faced some of those situations in the past, and we'll certainly be prepared for that. Should it occur in the future.
We have about 5 minutes left here, Dr. Russi, and I thank you for your time. But one of the questions we have gotten a lot is when it comes to the younger kids, and, you know, even if there only are 13 or 14 kids in a class, or maybe even less, they're with that teacher most of the day.
Mm-hmm.
They will have to wear masks now. Is it thinkable, is it logical that a teacher will be able to have those kids keep those masks on all the time and still be able to teach?
No, I don't think it is. And I think, again, the understanding is that, you know, kids are going to have mask breaks, and we're going to have them. But what we've really done is work. You know, Chrissy Sprinkle, our school nurse, has done a lot of in-service and professional development with our staff members on what mask breaks should look like, how long, you know, making sure that students are distanced when they are having mask breaks. I feel like we have a pretty good plan in place ready to do that, to handle, you know, those things. I mean, obviously the younger kids are going to be a little bit more of a challenge, but, and it may take a week or so for us to get, you know, get them acclimated to that. But I think we are prepared, and again, I'll give a lot of credit to our nurses who've worked with our teachers to make sure that they're following all those safety protocols.
I think one of the biggest questions when it comes to school is we did have to close schools early last year. We're starting a completely different way this year with the hybrid model. A lot of kids staying home doing remote learning. What effect do you think long-term this has on the kids involved right now in their education?
Well, you know, that I could talk for an hour about this, and one of the things I think that has evident, become more evident, is that, you know, the inequities and inequality that exist among school districts across not only the state but across the United States has been just amplified by this pandemic. You know, we know that the situation in the spring that occurred and how it affected Marion City Schools students as opposed to maybe, you know, somewhere else that's a lot more affluent. I mean, if you think about, you know, some of our families barely have access to internet, and they might have one device in their class, in their, or in their house, rather, with four children, as opposed to, you know, maybe a family that's 60 miles from us or so that has a device in every room and high-speed internet and all those kinds of things. I mean, you know, my fear is that the achievement gap is going to widen amongst, you know, those families that can support their kids academically and financially as opposed to those who can't. You know, and I hope our legislature and everybody realizes this. You know, maybe this is a wake-up call for everybody who, you know, puts information on a school report card and holds two report cards up and compares what we call, you know, achieving schools to non-achieving schools, which has become malarkey in my opinion, that this has really revealed, you know, the inequities that do exist amongst our school districts, and the way we educate our kids in Marion City might be a little bit different than they would in maybe a community like, you know, Upper Arlington or Hilliard or whatever those districts are, just because of the resources that are available. So, you know, in my opinion, we need to really take a step back and look what's happened to our school districts as a result of this pandemic, and take that information and carry it forward about how we support schools like Marion City Schools that has 100% free and reduced lunch.
Mm. It's interesting, it's changing, it's fascinating, and I cannot thank Marion City School Superintendent Dr. Ron Arusi for joining us this morning and sharing this information with people who maybe heretofore did not have the information. Dr. Arusi, best of luck with the start of the school year next year. I hope you come back with us if there are any new developments, and thank you for your time and all the effort we know that you're putting in.
Well, again, I appreciate you guys and the work that you do in the community and allowing me this opportunity, because I think it's important. As many modes of communication to get information out to our families, we need to take advantage of. So I appreciate you guys, and all you need to do is send me an email, and I'll be on whenever you need.
Thanks, Dr. Arusi. Take care.
Thank you. All right, bye-bye. Thanks. Bye.
Dr. Ron Arusi, Superintendent of the Marion City Schools, and that's what you needed to know. We'll be back in about 15 minutes.
Yeah, all you'd have to do is raise your hands and energize our transmitter.
To formerly of WNCI, Weasel Boy, is that true? I've never asked that question on air.
I can tell with it.
I wasn't even sure.